Hey guys, hey. Okay,
hey.
So I am just taking a little time away from my usual videos and my usual content and the lives that I do to have a little chit chat with some women, some dynamic women around the world, starting with Janine. And I really wanted to capture just the everyday woman who is doing amazing things, whether in their career, in their general life, their personal life, in business in general, so entrepreneurs, or just the average professional, and capture the essence of who they are, but also capture a bit of how they're leading their life and others around the world. So today I introduce you to Janine, who's a psychotherapist. She's an entrepreneur. She does amazing things in London and across the Caribbean. And I really wanted her to share a little bit about herself, her story, and then we'll get into the nitty-gritty of who Janine really is. So, Janine.
Hey,
how are you doing?
I'm all right. Thank you very much. Yourself?
I'm pretty good, I think. I think I'm pretty good. Yes. Give me three words that describes Janine. Who is Janine?
I think the first word has to be talkative.
Okay.
So I said, as soon as you asked me for three words, I was like, I don't know if I could just do three. Talkative, creative, and driven.
Okay. Yes. Talkative, creative, and driven. And do you think that these three words have been reflected in your career over the years? Do you think you have truly been able to capture that in Janine Wilson?
I think that So I'm 35. Let's start off there.
Okay.
I think in my 30 plus, the driven side of me has definitely started to come out a lot more.
Right.
But I think the creative and the talkative, especially as I'm a psychotherapist, which I'm sure we'll get onto.
Yeah.
The talkative part and the creative part has been there all along.
Right. Okay. So tell me about 13-year-old Janine. We're going way back.
I wasn't even ready. I feel like I need to sit back. 13-year-old Janine was in a private secondary school in Kent.
Oh, nice.
In Kent.
You went to school in Kent.
Big up.
Sorry.
So it was in a private secondary school in Kent. 13-year-old Janine was definitely trying to find who Janine was, as I was one of about four black girls. I went to an all-girls school.
Right.
I was one of four black girls in my year. Probably one of maybe 10 in the whole school.
Right.
And I was definitely trying to find what it was to be Janine. So I always had natural hair, so I had plaits, and you know, everybody wanted to know what this was.
How come
your plaits are like that? They don't look like the weave, or they don't look like the extensions or whatever. So there was that. And there was just finding myself in terms of who I was in school when I was that person, when I was, you know, and then also who I was out of school, because I had, you know, my parents are Guyanese, it's Guyanese culture.
Yeah.
It's, you know, all of those things. It almost like I had two different sides of me at age 13, I would say.
It was like two different worlds, and you almost had to fit into both.
Exactly. Which sometimes worked and sometimes was a bit mad.
So, crazy question here, but do you think your 13-year-old self will be proud of Janine today, and why?
Yes. I decided this. Do you know what? This is so. I always think there are no mistakes, there are no coincidences in life, and this is actually something that I was thinking about a couple of weeks ago when I was talking to somebody about doing what we call inner child work.
Right.
So where you actually have conversations with your inner child. So right. you go back and you have conversations at 35 with 13-year-old you, for example. Mm. And I was explaining why that's really important, because at times there can be things that we haven't healed from. Mm. You know, 13-year-old you, there can be hurts and pains and traumas that we're still holding on to,
right.
as women as well, from that time. So I actually was saying to myself the other day, I think I would be, 13-year-old me would think I was, for want of a better term, badding up the game.
Love 13, it.
Yeah, because 13-year-old me, while I was quite confident in myself and I was able to say what I wanted to do and how I wanted to do it, I was still very, I had moments of doubt.
Mm.
So even though people would tell me, oh, Janine, you're really good at drama.
Yeah.
I would think I was good at drama.
Drama, yeah.
They would tell me I was good at drama. But would I really believe to myself that I could do it?
Mm.
And I think that now, looking back, it would be like, well, yeah, actually you did. And you're not even finished yet because you're only 35.
Yeah, you're just getting started in a sense, yeah?
Exactly, exactly.
Wow. And so for you, what did success look like at 13 versus what it looks like now? Like when you think of success, do you think you've gotten it? And or is there some level of it you've achieved? And is it the same as how you thought of it back then?
Mm-hmm. Again, I feel like you're just in my mind, because this was a thought. This was literally a thought I had yesterday about the differences between career success and personal success.
That's it.
You know, and the fact that I think from a career success standpoint, there's definitely, you know, more things I want to do, more things I want to achieve. But if I was to say at 35, do I feel like I have succeeded? I would say yes.
Okay.
In terms of I've met my, you know, I've got my goal in terms of training as a cognitive behavioral psychotherapist. I've got my goal in terms of training as a drama therapist. I've got different passion projects which are turning themselves into businesses, etc., etc. So from a career standpoint, I feel like all right, Jay.
You're doing it.
Not too bad. I'm all right. It's not too bad.
Yeah.
And then it's interesting. And then you go to the flip where you think about personal successes.
Mm.
And I go back and I look at, because I've always been a diary writer.
Right.
And I go back and I look at my diaries from when I was younger, you know, and it was like, well, by 25, I'll be married. I'll have twin boys. They'll be called this and they'll be called this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll have a lovely house and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I think it's very easy to think that, okay, because you haven't got that, because I have not fulfilled that part of my goal as yet.
Right.
It can be easy to slip into that kind of failure mindset. I think there's a lot of, you know, it just in society in general, from a woman, you know,
the
from a woman,
pressure, yeah.
The pressure, you know, you're 35, you're not married yet, you haven't got any kids yet. Oh, you know, once you hit 30, you're getting over the hill for them babies. All of those different things. And there was a picture that somebody, you know, those things that people pass around on social media.
Yeah.
And it said, I went back to school at 35. I did my first squat at 36. I wrote my first book at 40, right. And I am being a parent at 46.
Nice.
And it was just like, people just need to get rid of those timelines and just do you.
That is so interesting that you should say that, because oftentimes it's so funny, because like when you're a younger female, oftentimes you're told, no, you got time. You're too young, you know, let life happen, you know? It's all these things that we hear, whether it's from family, friends, society in general. And then from the time you hit a certain age, it's like, no, what are you waiting on? Hurry up.
Let's go. It's like, but didn't you tell me a couple of minutes ago that I had all the time in the world? And
it was literally yesterday. Right, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you feel that pressure building? Like, what do you think in terms of how females are viewed as to what they're meant to do? Because I feel like even as a new mother, I'm meant to fill all these roles, all these boxes. Mm-hmm. I'm meant to do it. And not only fill them, but do them pretty perfectly.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Perfectly.
You know, so like, how do you feel about the woman's role in society just in general? Like, what is that for you, or what does that look like?
I feel like the woman's role in society at the moment is almost as if we are set up to fail from the jump. So, and when I say, I'm not saying that we do fail, I'm just saying we are set up to.
Right.
So, like you say, if we decide, as a woman, I decide that I want to focus on my career.
Right.
Clearly, I may not have the 9 months to sit down and put up my foot and have a baby, for example. Right. So I may have to focus on the career.
Yeah.
And then you'll have, oh, but are you sure you don't want kids? Oh, but are you sure, you know, make sure, don't work too much, you know, because, you know, you won't be able to do all these things. And then if you do decide to be the, you know, let's call it a housewife, let's say, if you do decide to stay at home, have children, maybe put the career on the back burner, it's then, oh, all those brains going to waste. Mm. Oh, it's such a shame that you know. And then if you do try and, inverted commas, have it all,
yeah,
even then it's a problem. It's an issue. Oh, you know, this, she should spend more time with her family. Oh, she's never in the office. Well, which one do you want?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not pick sure one. Which one you want. Pick one. And I think, but what I do think is a good thing, and I actually think you're a fantastic example, is that more and more people are deciding, women are deciding, A, I have control of my own body, and I can do with my body what I wish.
Mm.
And actually this idea of I can have it all is possible.
Yeah.
It may not be easy. You know, there are many people doing it all that have millions in the bank.
True.
It's probably a lot easier to do it all when you have millions in the bank, because you can have nanny, you can have cook, chef, you know, cleaner, maid, blah, 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 blah. But you may, you know, when you're working, you know, 9 to 5, doing entrepreneurship, et cetera, et cetera, it can be quite difficult to fulfill all of those roles. But I think as women, we're definitely in a place where more women are showing an example of we can do it.
Yeah,
we can work and have children. We can have a career and look after our families.
Yeah,
et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, I think there's a shift, but there's still a long way to go.
Yeah, I think generally women are taking back control. Women are deciding rather that there's no need to put themselves in a box, and they will craft the kind of lifestyle they desire based on what they actually want to do and not what they're being told. I mean, and I say that generally. I know there's some women who may not necessarily feel that way or have the confidence to do that, but I think it's shifting.
And so, I think what you said there is a key point, you know, the confidence.
Yeah.
Because sometimes when I look back, I think to myself, when I was in that moment and in that time, I may not have realized what I was doing.
Right.
And now looking back, I'll be like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you actually were crafting a path there.
Yeah.
You were actually making a decision for yourself that helped you in the long run. So I think when I speak to women now, I feel like sometimes they lack the confidence to know that what they're doing and the decisions they're making at the moment are actually really good.
Exactly. Exactly. You know? It's so interesting. I really like talking to you, you know. So tell me a little bit more about your professional side of you. What does that look like?
So the professional side is, I like to do lots of things well.
Okay.
So, and I split that into two, I would say two parts. So I'm a psychotherapist.
Right.
Is my main role in life. Mm-hmm. And I'm a creative practitioner.
Okay.
And pretty much all of my main projects and bodies of work have got in some way to either do with the creative practitioner side of myself or the psychotherapist side of myself.
Okay.
So part-time I'm employed by the National Health Service NHS in the UK.
Okay.
I work for a child and adolescent mental health services organization. I work with children and young people that have moderate to severe mental health difficulties. So whether that be anxiety, depression, early onset psychosis, OCD, et cetera, et cetera. And then my kind of other half is my freelance practices. So I have a freelance practice called Creative Lotus.
Okay.
And we provide therapeutic services for children, young people and families. And for me, Creative Lotus is really about access.
Right.
So there are lots of people. I love to work with Black people within the community as well in terms of access to therapy.
Okay.
So it may be very simple to say, oh, you know, you're feeling anxious, go see a therapist. Well, unfortunately, there's still a lot of stigma around mental health in the Black community, you know, in the UK. Obviously, I'm speaking about London and things like that as well. So making sure that there's access. It can also be very easy to say, go and access psychotherapy. But for some psychotherapists, it can be £90 an hour. It can be £150 an hour. So it's also about making sure that, you know, families have actual access.
Right.
There's equality in being able to access these services. So it's not just, oh, because I can give you the leaflet, that means you can access it. Actually, if you don't have £90 a week
to
do this, then actually, you know, what are you going to do? So I think it's important to think about how you can actually work with people to make sure they can access these particular you know, therapies. So we work on a sliding scale system. So for example, if you have access to benefits, you know, if you're from a low income household, et cetera, et cetera, we make sure that you can access therapy that's affordable for you as well.
Nice.
And then we also do workshops, seminars. We offer consultation to external organizations. Creative Lotus has done some work with yourselves. I Am a Girl Barbados, which is amazing. And we just continue to try and advocate for children and young people to make sure that their voice is always heard, because it can often be lost.
Yeah. And for you, why do you think that stigma exists? Why do you think mental health isn't taken as seriously, especially in women and girls?
I think we are in a place where we, from a British standpoint, we keep calm and we carry on. You know, actually, it can't be that bad. I'm sure it's fine. I'm sure all will be well.
Right.
You know, just pat on the back, they're there, and let's keep it moving. I think that is one of the issues. I also think, I'm going to talk about within the Black community, I think there's a lot, we're steeped in not wanting to be in people's business. We're steeped in not wanting to have conversations about difficult topics. Women and girls, I think generally throughout history, we have been silenced.
Right.
I think, you know, our voices are often not important. So from an intersectionality perspective, when you then have woman, you then have Black woman, you know, maybe put age into there as well as another section. In a way, you're moving further and further down the pole in terms of how many people will actually listen to you and actually validate your experiences. And I think that's really one of the main issues, is that I think from a women and girls perspective, we have to make sure we listen to each other and we validate and we support and we say, if you are finding it difficult to deal with this particular situation, that doesn't make you weak.
Right.
This makes it that you're able to share your vulnerabilities. That's really what this is. I also think it's about us not necessarily, I think this generation, I would say I thank millennials. I'm kind of like just at the tip top of the millennial bracket. So I can kind of take a little thanks from it. But I think millennials are a lot better at asking for the help they desire. So there's a lot more people accessing therapy, a lot more people asking for the help they need, etc., etc., which I think is fantastic.
Yeah. I'm very rare, because the generation above that believes that you should just get over it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Get over it. What you worry about?
Just get over it. You know, I was working all these hours and I didn't have to speak to anybody and I was perfectly fine. But unfortunately, you weren't perfectly fine, because we're still trying to break generational trauma from your experiences. Yeah, things that we now see as domestic violence, domestic abuse, things that we now see that the way our parents or our parents' parents might have been treated, we're now able to say as women and girls, that's not all right.
Right.
And I think that's something that we weren't able to say. If we were to go to our mums and our grands now and kind of say, oh, you know, when this person spoke to you like that, you know, that wasn't all right.
Right, exactly. Or,
you know, when, you know, you used to hit your children in this particular way, you know, that's not all right. I think those are the changes that we're starting to see. And I think they're good changes.
Yeah. I think it, for you, how long do you think it will take, like truly take, for women in general to feel like, you know, I can get this support, I can lean on other women? Because, you know, in society, especially in our careers, oftentimes we communicate with, work with, partner with other women. And oftentimes, sometimes we shy away from partnering with other women because of this back and forth pull. So how long do you feel like society will take to truly shift that mindset that women can work together effectively and lead different things in different ways as a unit? Or maybe you might think it's impossible.
this is the thing. Do you know what? I was going to say, I feel that I'm a Libra, so my scales are tipping. Let me start with the pessimist. The glass half empty pessimist in me says society actually doesn't want us to work together, because I feel when people work together, we can push away a lot of the kind of the evils that are in the world. If that makes sense.
Right.
So the pessimist, as I say, the half empty glass doesn't think, it feels bad to say it, but just doesn't think that we'll actually ever really get to a place of harmony and one accord.
Right.
The optimist in me, the glass half full overflowing,
yeah,
says that actually I think it's enough that we're already there in terms of, even if we said out of 100 women, the 50 women, for example, that are supporting each other, helping, listening, supporting, giving empathy, blah, 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 is amazing. And I think that should be celebrated in itself.
Right.
So I'm on both sides of it in a way, in terms of how long.
Okay. So tracking back to the different parts of Janine professionally. So there's the psychotherapy part and then there's the creative part.
Yep.
Tell me about any challenges you may have faced over the years in either of those parts of you, whether the career Janine, the entrepreneur Janine, whatever ventures you've had over the years, what are some challenges that you faced?
My biggest challenge has been myself in terms of my levels of procrastination.
Right.
If procrastination was an Olympic sport, I would be a gold medalist.
Stop
like
it.
At the front, holding my medal, like middle podium, because I'm very good at finding absolutely anything else to do other than the thing that might actually get me where I need to be.
That's
definitely something that's happened for me over the years. Mentorship was really important at that point.
Okay.
Making sure that I was able to get somebody that could help me, support me goals wise. So challenges definitely, like I say, procrastination. And I think that procrastination came from me doubting myself.
Right.
So me thinking, you know, for example, I do a podcast, me thinking, oh, why would anybody want to listen to me? Stopped my podcast from really starting until probably last year. I did a radio show at one point. Oh, who would really want to listen to anything I have to say? That stopped me, you know. Writing things, starting my own private practice. Oh, who would want to come to me when they could go to all these other places that are already open and running wonderful businesses? So that little self-doubt, little demon that likes to sit on your shoulder and say, nah, 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 there's someone else doing this that's a lot better. That's definitely been a challenge.
So I hear you talk about mentorship, but generally, because I'm hearing you saying mindset is at the core of what challenge you or what challenge to push you in doing things maybe faster or better or even starting in general. And you, you mentioned mentorship, but I'm wondering, is there any other tips you could share that helped you to shift your mindset, shift how you were thinking about different things?
So as I said, mentorship. Secondly, journaling. So I think probably the cognitive behavioral part of me, there's a part of cognitive behavior therapy that talks about fact finding and evidence. And I think that is something that I try to lead with. So every single time that little voice came into my head, oh, why do this? Why do that? Or what you say doesn't make sense, or, you know, whatever.
Right.
I started to journal. So for example, at the beginning of 2019, I would have had a journal saying that I wanted to do these different goals, or I wanted to, you know, whatever I wanted to achieve.
Yeah.
And I would purposely make sure that every 3 months, I didn't do it monthly because I also can slip into this, oh yeah, but that's still not good enough. A bit of a perfectionist. You did that, but, you know, I've always got a, but there's something else better you could be doing.
Right.
So what I just made sure was that I was journaling. I was writing things down. I was writing what I was feeling, thinking, where I felt like I was in life at that time. And every couple of months, I was just going back and I was looking at where I was in that moment in relation to where I was when I'd written that journal entry. And making sure that I was saying, oh, actually, okay.
There was a shift.
That has changed.
Shift.
And that's what I mean by that fact-finding evidence, because it's when you're not writing it down and you're not taking stock of it, it's very easy, like I say, for that little demon to pop back up and be like, oh yeah, but you ain't really done much. But actually, if you're writing it down and looking at these, I'm a list lover as well, and you're looking at these lists and you're like, oh, okay, I did that. You're able to live more in that present of I'm doing something and it's looking good.
I totally agree with that. I know for myself, for example, if I don't write, let's say for a particular month, what goals am I achieving this month? How am I going to achieve it? What's the steps I'm going to take to achieve it? And then tick off as I am doing it. Or sometimes I might go back like a couple of weeks later and be like, oh, you did that. And
And actually, I think it's really important to reward. I think as adults, we don't reward ourselves enough. You know, we think that rewards are for children, you know. And I'm not saying reward, you're like, oh, I'm gonna make £500 and then I'm gonna go spend that £500 on a bag. No.
Yeah.
But I'm saying if you're, you know, set up yourself and say, okay. be smart. Set up yourself and say, okay, when I achieve these 10 things, I'm going to reward myself by doing this.
Right.
You know, so yeah, I think that's really important. So mentorship, as I say, journaling. And I would say the last thing for me from a supporting standpoint is I'm a vision boarder.
Okay.
And I'm, you know, I get my pictures, get my images, and I write things down, and I create a vision board. And it's just every morning, whether it's 10 seconds, whether it's 10 minutes, I just spend a little time with my vision board, just kind of looking, okay, this is what you're looking, all right. Sometimes I meditate over it, sometimes I just literally look at it and keep the day moving. But I just think keeping what you're aiming for in your focus. And I'm quite a visual person as well. So I think keeping what you're aiming for in your focus on a daily basis, I think is really important.
So thinking now, so this is now shifting the challenges perspective. So we talked about you and how your mindset was a bit of a challenge for you in your career and how you kind of shifted that based on some things that key things that you did. Now I want to talk to you about the flip of that. Is there any, in your entire span of career, is there any experiences you've had where, through a gender lens, where you've had to battle any issues regarding your gender in the workplace? And yes. or have seen it. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Can you share at least one story of that?
Yeah, I think it's difficult to share the story without having to without connecting gender and ethnicity or gender okay. and race.
Okay.
But I do still think it is there's still more of a gender element to it as well. So right. I'm a team leader in an NHS setting. And for you know people that know me know that I'm quite direct. I'm very clear in what I want, and I will tell you what I want and how I want it done.
Okay.
Now, I have seen in many situations in which my directness has been described as aggression, has been described as not being very nice, being intimidating, for example. But then if a male were to do the same thing, or to request something in with the same direct tone, et cetera, it wouldn't be seen in the same light.
Hmm.
And there's definitely a situation where I've gone into a senior leadership meeting where I was the only female in the senior leadership meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely had a feeling of being silenced. So it was almost as if, well, you can give your opinion when we ask for your opinion, but actually right now, these are the heads that are speaking.
Right.
And actually it's for you, little miss, to take a seat until we are ready to speak with you.
Right.
And when I decided that that wasn't what I was going to do, and I shared my, you know, shared my commentary, shared my thoughts, again, it was around children and young people, and like I say, for me, I'm an advocate for ensuring that the child's voice is heard. And I just felt that it wasn't being heard at that moment. And when I shared that, you know, shared my thought, etc., after the meeting, I was told by one of the male people in the meeting, oh, you know, well, sometimes you can come across a bit abrasive.
Okay.
You know, and I kind of thought to myself, interesting. And I said, well, how do you mean abrasive? Oh, well, you know, I just felt that there were some better ways that you could have put across your points. And I said, okay, you know, always open for feedback. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, well, you let me know in what way you think it would have been better for me to put across my points. And up until this day, he has not been able to actually give me any constructive feedback or constructive criticism to explain as to how it would have been better for me to get across my points.
Mm.
And for me, and I've been in that situation quite a lot in which the only thing it can come down to, because there were other people in the room shouting, there was banging fists on tables, there was a lot of, you know, gesticulation all over. But I was the one who was being abrasive and aggressive, and you know. So I think when you are a woman in leadership, when you mean business, when you can walk in and you can hold your own, I think it's important for women to know and feel that they may come up against some resistance,
right?
But as long as they feel like they are fighting for the cause they need to fight for in the way they need to fight for it, hold your own.
Yeah. What, because we could talk about this forever, right?
yeah
because things like that really, it really gets to me when we are almost meant to be put in our place, and we are meant to yes. act a certain way and sit a certain way and dress a certain way and appease mm-hmm. in a certain mm-hmm. way. So that's another conversation, maybe for another time.
Yes,
be here forever. But yeah. from the leadership perspective now, what would you say are some of the key shifts you've had over the years? Like, is there anything, of course, you've learned that even in situations like that, you really had to develop the skill of leading,
mm-hmm.
even in settings like that? That you mm-hmm, can share?
Mm-hmm. One of the main things I've learned is that, and it probably sounds very obvious saying it, but everybody does not think like you think.
Mm.
Everybody does not need the same leadership style as you have to give, right, for example. You know, when you think of learning styles, you know, the different way people learn through doing, through writing, through pictures, through, you know, different ways of learning. And I've learned that, I think, when I first kind of team leader position, I was very much, well, this is how I lead. Like,
yeah,
if you can't work with that, then we just can't work together.
Yeah.
I think in the earlys, it was very much like that. And actually, over time, I've realized, well, you know what, Janine? This person needs that, you know, kind of tough, hard line, boundaried way. This right. person needs a bit more softness and a bit more talking. This person needs you to actually be on them task by task by task.
Right.
And learning that difference in terms of how you lead different people. So going in and, you know, bulldozing in and just saying, well, this is my team and this is how I lead it and everybody work into line isn't gonna work.
Yeah.
And I think when I first started leading teams and do, you know, project managing and things like that, I think that was definitely a way I was quite blinkered in that way,
right?
And I think that over the years, that's something that I've learned that needs to shift, and it's still a work in progress.
Yeah. And I think you made an extremely good point. Understanding, a big part of leadership is understanding others as opposed to others mm-hmm. understanding how you function as a leader, right?
Yes.
It's more
yes.
about understanding their personality, their different experiences, mm-hmm. what they like and don't like. And I think part of that is the burden of leadership, because it's your responsibility to know what works for them as opposed to the other way around, right?
Exactly.
Maybe this is a key point that many people do not recognize until later, because not what you said at the beginning, it wasn't that way, and then there was like a shift mm. when you realize, wait, hang on, maybe I need to speak to this person differently or do something mm-hmm. like this person differently. So my question to you is, how important do you think is developing yourself as a leader, not necessarily having the title? Because oftentimes mm-hmm. when we're thrown in as leaders, we are given a title and we have to figure it out, you know, as we go. So I think mm-hmm. my question to you would be, how important do you think developing that skill and having training for that skill and learning a little more about what that means before you maybe get into a position where you have to supervise mm-hmm. others? Like, how important do you think that is and why?
Yeah. Hugely important. For again, from the team leader position that I'm in at the moment, I was thrown in as like acting team leader.
Right.
And then we never found anybody. And then I ended up interviewing and got the post. So, you know, I was thrown in as like, oh, you know, you'll just be acting for a couple of weeks, couple of months, and that, you know, which turned into a year, which turned into 3 years. And I was definitely thrown in the deep end. Number one, going from peer or going from colleagues to team leading those colleagues is a whole minefield in itself. So this is no longer the person that, you know, your colleague can come in and say, oh, I was late because I fell asleep, blah, blah, blah. They can't come and have that conversation with you anymore, because actually now you're the team leader. You can't come and tell your team leader the same information that you used to tell your colleague. I think also thinking about, as you say, from a development standpoint, training to be a leader, I think, is a huge part of what people lack. I think that people are put into these positions because they show leadership qualities, but actually, do you know what skill and what quality is needed when, for example? Do you know when it is, as a leader, do you know when it is important to take this particular approach versus when it's important to take that approach? Picking battles is something that I've learned as a leader. Sometimes you just have to let some things go, which for me isn't easy. You know, sometimes you just have to say, that happened, take that L, not a loss, but a learning, yeah, and keep it moving. That's, you know, those different type of things. And I think the more we can learn from each other, the better. You know, there are times, like I said, when I felt great that I was able to come to you and say, Alianne, this thing's happening. What do you think?
Yeah.
And then you, somebody who's possibly been through it, or at least, you know, there's another standpoint to be able to say, well, okay, Janine, I'm hearing this, but have you thought about this?
This, yeah.
And I think having those kind of peer leadership opportunities as well. So, you know, where I work, we have team leader every 3 months. We have a team leader peer group where we just get together and we're like, look, this is what's happening in my team. How are you guys dealing with this? How are you guys dealing with that? And I think without that, it's very easy to read a book. You know, there's all these books, 5 steps to this, the 7 steps to this, and all other steps. But actually, for me anyway, my learning style is definitely by doing.
Right.
So having people around me and having support around me is really important.
And from all your experience so far in your career in different spheres, especially in the psychotherapy side, what would you say is one of the biggest triumphs you've had as a leader? Was one standout moment as a leader that you've had? Food for thought.
Moment as a leader.
Okay, so I'll let you think about that.
Yeah. Let me. No. Got it. Hold on. Got it. I think as I was saying, Creative Lotus works nationally and internationally.
Right.
And I think one standout moment for me from a psychotherapeutic standpoint was being able to work in Barbados.
Okay, nice.
And being able to see, so from a training standpoint, being able to see some light bulb moments. So you know that feeling of like when you're in a seminar, you're in a workshop and, you know, people are asking you questions, you know, energy's buzzing around the room and you just start to see people in the room go, oh,
I get it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Get it. That's why we do this, or that's why we say that. So that for me, I think was great.
Nice.
It's definitely one of the moments. Yeah.
How does Janine tackle failure head on? How do you lead through failure? Or do you?
I was going to say, I think it depends. Personal failure, I take a minute to be very distressed.
Right.
So personal failure, definitely. I take a moment to be like, oh my gosh, what happened? How did this happen? Yeah. How did it, you know, I just take a minute to be emotional because I'm aware I need that.
Yes.
Okay.
Good.
And then once I have done that, I'm like, well, okay, let's regroup. Number one, mm-hmm. Nobody died.
Okay, good.
Number two, nobody died. So that, like, for me, I'm followed by a perspective.
Okay, good.
Then what I try to do is, from a personal standpoint, when I say personal, if I'm not kind of leading a team that maybe the team have failed at something, so if it's like a personal thing, I then would say that I do, I get kind of like another kind of fact-finding, evidence-type mission. I try and distance myself from the Janine has failed.
Right.
As opposed to something within the task that I have been doing has not gone right. Because I think if I start to feel like Janine Wilson has failed, or Janine Wilson is a failure, that then becomes all-encompassing.
Right, of everything. Yeah.
Of everything. Right. And actually, you can fail at a task, and I'm all about the universe as well. You can fail at a task, and maybe the universe needed you to fail so that you can learn something else and then go around another way and do it that other way.
Right.
You know?
And maybe get even a better result.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Just because that one door closed, I'm very much, but there are 999 other doors.
Right.
So cool. From a group perspective, I think I allow for whatever the group needs to do. So for example, I know when I worked in schools, we have something called Ofsted, which is basically a governing body that says whether your school is good enough or not.
Right.
And I was in a school that had failed in Ofsted. So pretty much when you get that fail, that's everybody internalizes that. You know, yeah, it's like, it's, well,
their part in it and stuff like that.
Exactly. Oh, well, you know, if this person, if this teacher had done that, and if that child didn't do that, and if this headmaster didn't do this and all of this. And actually, from a leadership standpoint, even though I wasn't the headmistress or I wasn't, sorry, the head teacher or whatever, I was a counselor working in the school at the time, it was still really important to make sure everybody was able to distance themselves from Miss Wilson failed. Mr. Smith failed.
Yeah.
It was okay. There are a mixture of things that have happened here. How? What learning can we take from this?
Right.
How can we not make it that you as a person are a failure, but actually we have failed at a task, and right, it's now about how we can gain perspective on it, take the learning, and keep it pushing.
Yeah. Janine, gosh, man. So do you, from your explanation just now, do you think you lead yourself differently to how you would lead a team? And why would you shift your leadership in a different way?
Yeah. I think that I do. And then reversing, I guess, rewinding a little bit to the point that I made earlier about the different people that need different things.
Okay.
So there are people in my team that I believe require the same leadership style as I have for myself.
Right.
And interestingly enough, I feel those, it's interesting, but I think those are actually the people that I get on the best with.
Right.
So like in the, and like we say, probably because it's easy. It's bread and butter to me.
Yeah.
It's like, well, this is what we do. You know, let's go. I'm leading you lot exactly how I lead myself.
Right.
So let's go. They appreciate it. That's what they want. Good feedback. Great. But I think, for example, at the moment, the majority of my team don't require the same leadership style as myself.
Right.
Number one, I'm like the youngest. I'm the second youngest in my team. For example. So everybody that I lead is older than me.
Right.
Apart from one person, which is interesting.
Right.
It's also very interesting because we talked about that dynamic when working with men, but it's also interesting that my entire team is also women.
Ah.
And I think even that can be a can bring a dynamic in itself.
I would imagine, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, I think that is the reason there's a need for me to lead differently, because I think it's about taking into consideration.
Repeat what you just said at the end.
Oh, sorry about that. I think my microphone just began to move around a bit.
No problem.
Apologies. You're going to have to remind me where I was.
So you're saying leading a team of women, you have to kind of... Yes. Think through or reconsider I guess how you lead them and what you do and what you say.
Exactly. And I'm not saying that would necessarily be any different if it was a mixed gender team, but I just think it brings a whole new dynamic,
right,
when you're working with a team, just like how if I was working with a team that were just male, I think that would also bring a different dynamic. Those things into consideration.
Right. Okay. So tell us about the other parts of Janine. What are some of the fun facts you could share about Janine outside of psychotherapy?
Fun facts. I mean, how many do you want?
Listen, you can share two.
I can share two. All right. Carnival is my lifeline.
Uh-oh.
Yes, that will be fact number one. Carnival is my lifeline. And traveling is my second love. So Carnival is my first, traveling is my second. I think without, and at the moment, you know, within the current climate, this lack of travel is
having
an impact.
So tell me about that. Like, now that we're in a space of such uncertainty and, you know, we're kind of unsure of what we're doing, when things are going to open back, what's happening, and for the most part, most carnivals, if not all around the world, have been cancelled until 2021.
Cancelled.
Travel is mm-hmm. up in the air. Mm-hmm. Some flights are, some companies are going out of business. There's so much change that's yep. happening. There's so much shifting that's happening. What does that mean mm-hmm. for Janine?
This means that I'm just having to find other ways of keeping myself uplifted, because
right.
while I love my work, I love the people that I work with, I love the work that I do, I look forward to my travel. Right. I think I would say definitely at least once a quarter I'm out of the country.
Right.
Whether that be for a carnival, whether that just be for some general rest and relaxation, I fly out, I find a beach, and that's me. My affinity is with water. So as soon as I can find the sea, I'm at peace.
Mm.
So I think it's been difficult. Thankfully, I managed to travel at the end of February, beginning of March. I came over to see you guys in Barbados. I was in Trinidad. So thankfully I had that time. So, my feet are itching at the moment, but I'm not as stressed
yeah.
as if I hadn't traveled since last year.
Right. But
this period of uncertainty, like for so many people, is just that. It's very difficult to tolerate uncertainty. You know, we like to have control of our lives. Where am I going? What am I doing? What's next on my list? What do I need to do next? And when control has completely been taken away from you, that's a really difficult place to be.
Has it impacted your career in any way so far, and how?
Yeah. So I have so as I say, Creative Lotus is my private practice from a psychotherapy standpoint. A lot of people do not have money right now. Mm. You know, they don't, unfortunately for some people, therapy is seen as a luxury.
Right.
So actually they don't have the money every week to be paying for those therapy sessions. Thankfully, there are some people that use, insurance. There's some people, we do offer a sliding scale. So there are some people that are able to continue, but that's had an impact because I have lost clients, hopefully not for the long run, but at least for now, there are clients that have had to pause their therapeutic practice. I run one of my passion projects that I run, which is a bar service, because in my younger years, I used to run bars and do mixology and all that type of thing. Unfortunately, people's weddings have been cancelled. People, there are no events taking place. So actually, if there are no events, there's no need for bars. So that's an impact. Again, like I say, passion project, which is turning into a business, is something I have called Carnival Concierge. There's no carnival, so there's nothing to concierge for. So it's difficult. It's impacted a lot on kind of, I would say, the entrepreneurship arm of what I do. It's impacted a lot on those things. The NHS is still there. That's not going anywhere, thank God.
Yeah.
But the other parts, it's had a huge impact on.
Mm. And for other women entrepreneurs, for other professionals out there who, have really been impacted by COVID globally, and also just impacted generally by the lack of need for some of the ideas or businesses that they had running, what advice, if any at all, that you have, mm-hmm. what advice would you give to them directly?
So to those that maybe were starting on their journey, but for some reason it got shifted or moved keep planning.
Right.
Keep planning. I think there's a lot of talk about, 2020's cancelled. The year is just a pointless year. I don't think there's anything pointless in this year.
Right.
I think that actually, however you want to look at COVID-19, actually what I feel COVID-19 has done is it's given us time to be with ourselves. I think it's given us time to, maybe be with our loved ones more. There's quite a few people that I've been speaking to that are saying, I don't miss work. Or I'm realizing that actually I'm in a job that I absolutely hate, Or, you know, so actually those projects, those things that you started to grow, continue to plan them. Start to, you know, whether it's business plans, whether it's you working out how you might deliver that particular project for in an online basis, you know, because one thing that we've said about the NHS from a therapeutic standpoint is that the NHS cannot go back to how it was in terms of not offering things remotely. You know, we have to move into, this is almost a forced move into the remote age, you know, to some degree. So continue planning. If you're able to make links with people, have conversations like this, get a mentor, use this time as best as you possibly can. Equally, don't beat yourself up if you put things on pause. I think there's this huge thing of like, oh, all these people have got this time at home, learn a language, learn to do this, learn to do that. And actually, this is a very stressful time for a lot of people. So we need to make sure that, you know, if you feel you are able to keep doing, keep planning, blah, 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 great. If not, take a moment, chill out, and come back.
And it's so interesting you said that. I actually wrote 5 points that you just mentioned, and I feel like they're transferable to whether you're an entrepreneur or even just a professional having a career, have a job, might feel secure in your job, you never know, or might feel like you haven't quite gone to your place of success yet. And what I heard from you is find a way to think about how you can pivot, knowing that the online space is really being developed and persons are really going towards digital age even more than they were before now. So mm-hmm. one of the things you can do is try to pivot in whatever aspect you're doing, whether your career, entrepreneurship, whatever it may be. Second point I took from you is planning for that change. So whatever that change may be, start planning and think of how can I make this actually effective and lucrative in the long run. Mm-hmm. But a great point I heard you made was, you know, some persons are at home knowing or understanding now in this downtime that they don't actually like the job they're in. So, and that's such a valid point, like mm-hmm. not feeling like you have to be stuck and you have to go back mm-hmm. to what you are accustomed to or the norm. So finding purpose, finding what your purpose actually yes. is, and sometimes finding that yes. purpose means this isn't the career for me or this isn't the job for yep. me. Mm-hmm. The fourth point was finding a mentor, having someone who could, or even a peer, you know, accountability partner, you know, someone who could keep you on track, help to keep your mindset right even through this time. But the most beautiful point of all that I am going to take away, even for myself sometimes in taking away that blame, it's okay to do nothing.
Yeah.
Can we have a moment of silence for that? It is okay to do nothing, because I feel like there's this pressure of you have to come out of this on the other side like a rock star. You got mm-hmm. you got to come out, and there's this whole talk about the other side, and it's like mm-hmm. Actually we're still 2024. We're still here.
Yeah, like it's okay. We're all right.
So
there's a lot of people who don't feel like they're okay, but
yeah,
if you are okay, like you're all right.
There are, you know, yeah, it's,
2020 it's, is still a year.
We're going to be all right. Yeah. Be all right.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, Janine, thank you so much. This has been amazing. I feel like there are so many questions I have. Well, at the same time, I feel like we've tightly packed mm-hmm. in so much. And I'm sure we could do a part two to this at some later point. But one of my final questions to you would be, if there's anything at all you can share, any general advice you feel could work for any career goer, any professional woman, any professional generally who really wants to either grow, shift, or elevate themselves as a leader, what would that advice be?
Follow your intuition.
Mm.
If you feel this isn't the job for you, move.
Right.
If you have been growing apples in your backyard and you want to start a cider business, start the cider business.
Right.
Just follow. Like we say, I stole this from my brother, but I don't take L's as losses. I take them as learnings.
Mm.
And actually the worst that can happen with you following your intuition or following that little voice saying, yeah, do that, is that it don't work.
Yeah.
And then it's either you say, okay, it didn't work, I'm going to go back, finish working in Sainsbury's. Or you find out it didn't work and you try another way.
Yeah.
Or you try something different. So just follow that intuition and keep pushing.
Follow that intuition and keep pushing. Good advice, man. Thank you so much, Janine. It's been a pleasure. And I wish you every bit of success in any and every venture that you're going to have going forward. I'm looking forward to seeing all of these businesses and ventures you have growing and flourishing.
Yes.
Well, yes, into 2021. Yes. And yeah, man, let's keep this conversation going and growing with others. Cause not everyone is, what I recognize, not everyone is as comfortable, you know, capturing their thoughts and their moments on video and being interviewed. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But there's going to be some woman out there or some professional out there, woman or male, who's going to watch this and or hear this. And there's something that they're going to be inspired by, I'm sure. And all because of you. So I thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
And until next time, until when we catch up again, I look forward to seeing your growth.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.